A person who is not a bona fide guru.
A person who is not a bona fide guru.
An ordinary person.
An ordinary person.
Janasya. Of an ordinary person.
Of an ordinary person.
Who does not know the goal of life.
Who does not know the goal of life.
Adishyate.
Adishyate.
Instructs.
Instructs.
Asatim.
Asatim.
Impermanent.
Impermanent.
Material.
Material.
Gatim. The
goal of life.
Yaya. By such knowledge.
Prapajeta.
He surrenders.
Gurachiham.
Insurmountable.
Insurmountable.
Tamaha.
To ignorance.
Tuam. Your lordship.
To.
But.
Avyayam.
Indestructible.
Jnanam,
knowledge.
Amogam,
without material contamination.
Anjasa,
very soon.
Prapajyate,
achieves.
Yena,
by such knowledge.
Janaha,
a person.
Nijam,
his own.
Param,
original position. Translation. A materialistic so-called guru instructs his materialistic disciples about economic development and sense gratification, and because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge that is eternal, and the intelligent person receiving such knowledge is quickly situated in his original constitutional position. You can repeat. A materialistic so-called guru, instructs his materialistic disciples
about
economic development
and sense gratification.
And because of such instructions, the foolish disciples continue in the materialistic existence of ignorance. But your lordship gives knowledge
that is eternal.
And the intelligent person
receiving such knowledge
is quickly situated
in his original constitutional
position. So purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So-called gurus instruct their disciples for the sake of material profit. Some guru advises that one meditate in such a way that his intelligence will increase in regard to keeping his body fit for sense gratification. Another guru advises that sex is the ultimate goal of life, and that one should therefore engage in sex to the best of his ability. These are the instructions of foolish gurus. In other words, because of the instructions of a foolish guru, one remains perpetually in material existence and suffers its tribulations. But if one is intelligent enough to take instructions for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as enunciated in Bhagavad Gita, or the Sankhya philosophy of Kapila Deva, one can very soon attain liberation and be situated in his original position of spiritual life. The words Nijam Param are significant. The living entity, being part and parcel of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has the birthright to a position in Vaikuntha Loka, or the spiritual world, where there is no anxiety. Therefore, one should follow the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Chaptvadeham Puna Janma Naiti Mam Eti Sorjuna. After giving up one's body, one will return home back to Godhead. The Lord lives in the spiritual world in his original personality, and a devotee who follows the instructions of the Lord approaches him, Mam Eti, as a spiritual person. Such a devotee returns to the Supreme, to the Personality of Godhead, and plays and dances with him. That is the ultimate goal of life. Jano janasyari shite satim gatim yaya prapadyeta drashyam tamaha twam atvav yayam jnanam amogamanjasa prapadyate jena jano nijam padam. So, Om Gana Timiranda Shah, Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur, Unmiritam, Yena Tasmai Shikarve Namaha. So, of course, Prabhupada is making reference to the scenario that occurred when Prabhupada wrote this purport, which is the 60s and 70s. And there were many gurus coming from so-called gurus. I have to make sure I have the terminology correct. There were many so-called gurus coming from India, and they were cheating people in different ways for pecuniary or financial purposes. Some of them were selling mantras. Yeah, that's good. Shanti, Om Shanti. Some of them were selling mantras. First they started the price around $30-something dollars, then it ended up $125, $135. And they were making a lot of secret mantras. And it turned out that those so-called secret mantras, when the disciples finally started to talk to each other about the secret mantras, they were all the same mantra. He said they were all specialized mantras just for the individual. And they weren't. They were actually just two or three different mantras. There were seed mantras, or the seed mantras, Gayatri seed mantras, like Aim or Klim, stuff like that. And then, excuse me. And there was another guru, you know, who's established like a sex commune in the United States. We're not going to mention names because it's impious. And, you know, so many of these things, there was a real hankering in America for Indian culture, Indian spirituality at that particular time. And of course, you had a very famous group, and I'm not going to mention their names, they're named after a particular insect, that was going to India and smoking ganja there. And Prabhupada actually said this, the ganja smoking in America came from India. So it's not that everything that comes from India is wonderful. That's where the hippies, and actually ganja was present in the United States even in the 1900s. That actually came from India. That's one of the wonderful imports from the land of spirituality. Anyway, so Prabhupada is making reference to these different gurus. And of course in the Vedic literatures we find stories of bogus gurus too. I mean, the most typical story told is the story of Shukracharya. Of course, Shukracharya, actually even his name, of course, Shukra means white. But in this particular context, it refers to the seminal succession. Seminal succession means that one is considered to be a guru because your parent or father was a guru, and it's a succession like that, rather than the bona fide disciplic succession. It's a succession based upon birthright. And I was just reading the other day about different people who give Bhagavad Saptahas, and it's like a family tradition. Like the child is trained up, regardless of whether the child is a devotee or not devotee, whatever, they learn the Bhagavatam to such an extent that practically no devotee in ISKCON has learned the Bhagavatam to such an extent. They practically know every verse of the Bhagavatam. And they learn how to be dramatic with it and attract an audience with it. It's a family tradition and has nothing to do with the person's spiritual position. Some of them, of course, may be spiritually qualified. We're not criticizing them in general. But it's a seminal succession. So Shukracharya, he was a seminal guru. And he sometimes even advocated or instructed his disciples to worship Vishnu, but to worship Vishnu for the wrong reasons. To become powerful, to defeat the demigods in the case of Bali Maharaj, because of the story we have just talked about here in the Bhagavatam previously. So he advised his disciples to do that. But when Vishnu came, or when it was time to actually engage in pure devotional service, he told his disciples to avoid Vishnu or not keep their promises. Of course, the typical story, Bali Maharaj. Bali Maharaj was told, don't offer three steps of life to Vishnu because he's going to take everything away. So, therefore, he was fit to be rejected. And there are certain instances where the guru can be rejected. In fact, in the ISKCON Disciple Course, we actually teach that. When to reject the guru, it's interesting. Because it is a fact that not everybody who has the position or everybody who's taken the service of initiating disciples is qualified. Now, on the GBC, we have this system not of rubber stamping gurus. Of course, that was a previous misunderstanding. When Prabhupada left the planet, naturally, unnaturally, people thought that these particular 11 personalities were automatically pure devotees because Prabhupada had given them the service of initiating. Actually, Prabhupada, let's go back a little bit. Prabhupada gave them the service of initiating on his behalf when he was present. Now, naturally, the devotees assumed that these particular individuals would be the ones to initiate after Prabhupada left. And actually, the GVC did not carry out its fiduciary responsibility properly to evaluate these individuals. But there was a natural assumption. I mean, that's understandable since everybody was about 19 years old when Prabhupada, not quite that young. Everybody was, in their 20s. There was maybe one or two exceptions in their 30s. In other words, their brains had not fully developed. I was listening to a class by Rina Nandamaraj, and he was admitting that in the 20s, his brain had not fully developed. I mean, he was humble. Unbelievable. So anyway, so he was admitting that. So that's why even in the United States, for someone to be president of the United States, they have to be at least 35. And we do find that even after that, their brain still doesn't develop in many cases. And the individuals I'm referring to shall remain anonymous. You can guess. So therefore, it was understandable. So people jumped to the conclusion that these 11 people were pure devotees. In fact, there was one devotee, I remember I was temple president in Miami. He was asking me, when did... there was someone new who was given the service of being guru. And I think a very nice devotee. He was a Panchajapita Maharaj. And this devotee in Miami asked me, when did he get his pure devotee initiation? And I said to him, well, if such an initiation is available, I'm going to take it. If that's all you have to do is become initiated as a pure devotee, to be a pure devotee. So, obviously, there's no such thing as pure devotee initiation. So, and this devotee is very nice. I mean, he's still performing devotional service. I'm not criticizing that. Panchajapita is a dear God brother. But in many cases, the people were not qualified to become gurus. And there was no, let's say, evaluation of the individuals at all. Now, the present system in ISKCON is not that the GBC is saying the person is qualified to become a guru or be a guru. The GBC is saying that they're meeting some minimum requirements. In other words, we know they're chanting their rounds, we know that they have, at least externally a good history. But basically, it's up to the individual. This is actually what's taught in the Disciple Course. Give you a little brief preview. that it's up to the individual. As they say, what is that caveat emptor? If you don't understand what that means, let the buyer beware. It's up to the individual, let's say, prospective disciple, someone who's looking for a guru, to evaluate. Now, that's part of the Vedic injunction. That's one of the Vedic injunctions. Every prospective disciple should spend some time evaluating, observing the guru. And the guru has to spend some time observing the prospective disciple. Now, of course, in ISKCON we have a system where, you know, the gurus travel, some of them travel. So how does that happen? Well, it's very nice. We have a system where the of temple presidents and other representatives, you know, congregational leaders and other people like that, who can observe a particular individual and vouch or not vouch as far as their spirituality. We're talking about this prospective disciple. So as far as the guru is concerned, obviously the disciple in ISKCON is probably not living with the guru, observing the guru 24/7, unless they put a camera in his, you know, web camera in his room or something like that. They could, just like we have here, we should put in every guru's ashram, except for the bathroom, of course, where you can watch. No, obviously, then you have to have some trust in other devotees who have association with that particular individual. You've been listening to classes on the internet. And you really, it's up to you to evaluate several different things. First of all, does the person, as we were talking about yesterday, Samit Pandish Rachyam Brahmanishnam? Those are the three qualities of a bona fide guru. Samitpani means he's a servant of his spiritual master. I'm not going to get into the details like I did yesterday. Shrotium, he has to understand the philosophy. Now, what does it mean to understand the philosophy? Not only does he have to understand the philosophy, he has to know philosophy. There's a difference. That may come as a shock to all of you. Understanding the philosophy means you understand you're not the body. And actually this Siddhanta. The Siddhanta and also some of the details. Now, the guru may not know every verse of the Bhagavatam. The guru may not know every story in the Vedic literatures. There may be some different opinions as far as, you know, like even bona fide acharyas, they have a different opinion about, let's say, when a particular pastime took place. Was it in this manvantara or another manvantara? You know, these things are not siddhanta, tattva. These are just like details. So there may be some difference in understanding details, but the siddhanta always has to be the same. I mean, just like yesterday, we were talking to someone who was given improper siddhanta, maybe not by guru, but by someone else. They were told, I mean, you have to understand the philosophy. And then we'll talk about what philosophy is. Understanding philosophy, which are two different things. So they were told that whatever happiness you're supposed to have, it's built in by your karma. Whatever money you're supposed to have, it's built in by your karma. And that applies to a non-devotee. But this is the advice they were given, was by a devotee, to a devotee, which they aren't devotees. The person is a devotee. And so that's not proper understanding of the philosophy. It's not that for a devotee that our breaths determine, how many breaths determine how long we're going to live. That's a non-devotee. You understand? They're under the jurisdiction of the karma. Under the jurisdiction of karma, yes. Like Prabhupada said, when someone's exercising, breathing hard, they're actually shortening their duration of life. That's why the yogis would control their breathing. And they would sometimes breathe one breath every, week or something like that. Imagine that. That's severe apnea. I wouldn't want to connect an oximeter to their finger because they would be diagnosed as dead. So the yogis, they would do that and they could live longer. Prabhupada said that's the system. But for a devotee, We're not under karma. And even, you know, one devotee presented to me, they were told by someone else that every devotee has to go see Yamaraj. You know, I mean, he said, Hare Krishna? I mean, what happened to the chanting of the holy name? That simply by even Namabhas chanting, what happens? All the Parabdha karma is gone. Everything, you know, the Parabdha karma is gone. I mean, you're not going to have to see Yamaraj if you're chanting Hare Krishna. As you know, that's one of the first things we learned. You put on your neck beads, that's your kavacha. Protects you against, you know, the Yamadutas has come, just shell me your neck beads. Of course, your neck beads will be on a gross body, obviously. I just said that. But, so in other words, there's improper philosophy, or improper Krishna conscious philosophy, or non-Krishna conscious philosophy being presented in the name of, you know, spiritual advice, isn't it? You know, so you know, this particular devotee was told that you know, don't make any endeavor to support yourself or get money for yourself, because whatever money you're supposed to have, you get anyway. Well, I mean, because I personally, I'm not worried about money. Or maybe I am, but I'm not on a personal basis. But I know for the temple that unless we make some endeavor to fundraise or friend raise, as they say nowadays, then, you know, the lights go off. We're not going to be able to renovate the temple. It's not that, oh, it's up to Krishna. Now, you know, of course, if you may be a Paramahamsa like Madhavendra Puri, that's true. And you can, you know, how many Paramahamsas around here? And, you know, you just take a vow, you're not going to ask, that's the highest stage, you know, Paramahamsa, highest stage of sannyas, that you're not going to ask anyone for food, you're not going to go to Walmart to go grocery shopping, and if food's supposed to be there, it'll show up. Now, phew, I'm not on that platform. Food, actually, sometimes it does show up, but that's because the devotees bring it. But I still cook it. So basically, yes, there's five factors of action according to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And, you know, Krishna is one of the factors, but there's other factors too, like the endeavor, the person, the place, etc. So, you know, we're responsible. You can't just blame Krishna for everything. You know, oh, I don't have enough money to live, so it's Krishna's fault. You know, Krishna didn't fulfill his obligation, you know, ananyas chinta yam dhamam, yajana patipasate, hesham litipitam dhamam, yoga kshem vahamyam. That statement is that, you know, someone is fully devoted to me, I preserve what he has, I carry what he lacks. You got to work too. You got to endeavor too. You know, you're responsible. You know, if you don't work, you're not going to get money. You can chant all day long, but if you don't work, you ain't going to get money. Unless, you know, Krishna just sends it from the sky. I mean, we had that happen sometimes when I was a devotee, yeah, many times when I was a devotee. But when I... And I, many years ago when I was a devotee, we were wondering where the rent for the temple would come. And, you know, it was only like $300 a month. Imagine rent, $300 a month. Pretty good. It was in Gainesville, Florida. And we were just wondering, and then some guy walks up to us, and, you know, I was out distributing Back to Godhead magazines to the black people in downtown Gainesville. Because they were the only people who would take magazines from me. And then some guy walks up and he hands us $300. And he disappears. Pretty good. That's also because we made an endeavor to do it. You know, it's not that we just sat in the temple and ate prasadam and waited for the money to come. So we made an endeavor to collect some money, and then Krishna reciprocated with that. So in other words, I'm just giving some examples how the philosophy is misunderstood many times. I mean, in many ways. The Siddhanta or the Tattva or different things are misunderstood. So really when one's looking for a guru, one has to understand, see if he understands the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. You know, someone may be presenting improperly the philosophy for some other reason, you know, for self-centered reason, or maybe they didn't understand the philosophy. But this principle of, let's say, Samipanishrochiyam, having heard from his spiritual master in disciplic succession, is very important, or else you're going to get an improper philosophy. You're going to be thinking you're still under the law of karma. I mean, of course, Prabhupada did say it's like a fan slowing down. But I mean, I hope that after 45, 50 years in the Hare Krishna movement, my fan has pretty much come to a halt. If it's still spinning, I'm in trouble. After that, you know, there's a token reaction. It's not karma. It's a token reaction. Token reaction means Krishna directly administers it to remind you of your past sinful activities or your past activities in this material world. And then what also, whatever happens to a devotee is directly done by Krishna to help the person go back to home, back to Godhead. You know, sometimes in something happens, and we were talking about this yesterday. Something happens and we just say, Krishna, why the hell did you do this? I've been serving you all these years. I've done so much for you. Why are you doing it? And then in retrospect, 20 years later, you understand why Krishna did that. So you would take shelter of the holy names and not be attached, as Krishna says. For those who I especially favor, sometimes I take things away. And then all they're left with is the holy name. And that's pretty cool. Because, I mean, the holy name is everything. I mean, so Krishna does that too, but it's not karma. In other words, you got to understand the philosophy. Okay, and that's the first point. And then also a guru has to understand philosophy. What do I mean by philosophy? You know, logic, reasoning, and understand, like, let's say the... what do we mean by the descending process, what we mean by the ascending process of receiving knowledge, and just to speak logically. Not to misunderstand what philosophy, he has to understand basic points of philosophy, and a guru also has to understand the different darshans, you know, the different things taught by the different acharyas, who may not be Krishna conscious, but, you know, like atomism or different aspects of Vedic philosophies to be able to understand it. The guru has to be able to defeat impersonal philosophy. So all these different qualities are there, necessary qualities. These are necessary. In other words, the guru has to have them. So it's up to the individual to ascertain. And if the individual finds out the guru doesn't have those qualities, and of course the final quality we mentioned before is brahmanishtham, it means always engaged in devotional service, then the guru can be rejected. and of course, rejection doesn't mean you call the person a demon. If you find out he's insufficient in knowledge of tattvas or siddhanta, then you take shelter of someone who is. You don't reject him. In other words, you don't like say, you're no longer my guru, but you accept someone who has superior knowledge to help you advance further in devotional service. And even if there is, you by mistake accepted someone who's not a bona fide guru, this is actually part of the disciple course, then and they've fallen accidentally, you just pray for them to come back and you don't reject them, but you accept shiksha from someone who is actually qualified. So anyway, so these are some of the points. So Prabhupada said blind following, and Bhagavad Gita says blind following and absurd inquiries are condemned. So in other words, we even with the guru, we don't follow blindly. Like Bali Maharaj is famous because he didn't follow blindly. He was following before. But when the guru said something unbona fide, don't offer to Krishna, don't surrender everything to Krishna, then he rejected at that particular juncture. And then actually his guru even cursed him after that point. He said, you're going to be bereft of everything, the Lord's going to take away everything, and that's exactly what happened. But that was nice. So anyway, so see, these are some points. Oh my God, we got one more minute left. So one should go into Krishna consciousness with open eyes and not accept things blindly. That was the main point I wanted to make. You know, like if you see your guru going into a liquor store, make sure he's going in there to preach. Actually, there was one devotee who said, even if Lord Nityananda goes into a liquor store, even if he marries a Muslim girl, I will not be deterred from my conviction that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But if your guru, I mean, if he's a grahasta, he can marry a Muslim girl. There's no problem with that. And he can go into a liquor store to preach. But anyway, just have open eyes. Don't accept anything blindly. Okay. On that happy note, I hope I haven't talked myself out of a job. Anyway. All glories to divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada.